While the election of 2020 will be remembered for a number of things, one of the big issues that came up in this election was that of environmentalism. And environmentalism is nothing new. It's been around for a long time and has been discussed for a long time. However, there has been much more intensity concerning this topic in recent days. Were it simply a political issue, it would have nothing really to do with what we do in studying the Bible. However, what we're seeing is that the environmental movement is actually joining hands with religious ideas. So let me give you an example of that. This is a quote that was taken from Roger Gottlieb in his book, The Case for Religious Environmentalism. Let's just simply see what he has to say regarding the merging of these two ideas. He says, "Finally, it should be noted that in reorienting theology and engaging in environmental activism, religions have lost their specifically religious character. The leader of the world's 300 million Orthodox Christians has called environmental pollution a sin. The environmental justice movement early on created the widely used principles of environmental justice, which begins by reaffirming the sacredness of Mother Earth. Religious environmentalism means that religious sensibilities have been extended into the environmental realm, not just so that Lutherans or Buddhists or Jews will simply join the Sierra Club." What would argue that this is a good thing and that religion as religion has a distinct and vital contribution to make a secular movement for democracy, peace, justice, and sustainability. I believe that environmentalism is by far the most spiritually oriented of political movements. When we look at that quote, there is little doubt that religion and environmentalism are linking together. And as Gottlieb points out, what we're beginning to hear is some of the basic ideas that we would hear in religion applied to that of environmentalism. So as we consider this idea from the standpoint of culture, from politics, and indeed from religion, we have to understand that Christians will need to come up with a way in order to explain their view on this idea so that it's in accordance with that of the Bible. So with those things in mind, let's think about this study, about Christians and environmentalism, to understand that God has told us how we are to view the environment and how we're to react to many of the ideas that we currently hear. As we think about this issue, let's go all the way back to the very beginning. In Genesis chapter 1, God describes the creation. And at the end of it, it says that God saw that He had all that He had made, and it was very good. When He finishes the creation, we find in Genesis 2, verses 1 through 3, this idea. The text says, "Thus the heavens and the earth were finished, and all the host of them. And on the seventh day, God finished His work that He had done. And He rested on the seventh day from all His work that He had done. So God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it God rested from all the work that He had done in creation." The idea here of rest is not that God was tired. I think most Christians understand that idea. The idea of rest is that God had nothing else to do to make His creation perfect. What He did in the 6 days of creating was to provide everything that was needed. And so it was very much like an artist who stands back and looks at his work and realizes that to add anything else to it would detract from the piece of art. That's what we're talking about with God. And so at the very beginning, we see the perfection of the creation. We see that God is satisfied and pleased with His creation. And then as we continue through the remainder of the Bible, what we find is that God will keep referring back to the creation to illustrate His power as the Creator. Let's look at just a couple of examples of this. In Isaiah chapter 42 and verse 5, we read, "Thus says God, the Lord, who created the heavens and stretched them out, who spread out the earth and what comes from it, who gives breath to the people on it, the Spirit to those who walk in it. If we look in Psalm 19, which depicts the creation, David begins this psalm by saying, "The heavens declare the glory of God, and the sky above proclaims His handiwork." As we look at the creation, both in Genesis 1 and 2 and throughout the Bible, what we find is that this is a testimony of God's genius, of God's power, and of God's ability to create what is perfect. Now, with those things in mind, we then come to the very apex of the creation, and that's mankind. As God creates the earth, He creates it in the sense of preparing it as a place where man can live. In Genesis chapter 1, in the first part of verse 26, this is what we find God saying. It says, "And God blessed them," talking about mankind, man and woman, "and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth." Here we find that of all the creation, we are finding mankind at the top, and the reason for that is because mankind is created in the image of God. And as this high point of the creation, humans then are given authority over the creation. Let's continue on as we look in verse 26, the latter part of it, where the writer states that humans are to have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heavens, and over the livestock, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. Skipping down to verse 28, we read, "And God blessed them, and God said, be fruitful and multiply, and fill the earth, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the heavens, and over every living thing that moves on the earth." Here we find mankind created in the image of God. And here we find mankind being given authority in three different ways. First of all, God says mankind is to subdue the earth. God says mankind is to dominate or to have dominion over the earth. And we find that God tells mankind to populate the earth. Taking all of these things into consideration and looking at how this creation created in the image of God for the purpose of partnering with God in the creation and to subdue, dominate, and populate it, we understand God's opinion of mankind. And from these things, what we realize is that mankind alone has the intellect to develop the methods of ingenuity and progress to subdue and to have dominion. We can certainly be impressed with ingenuity within the animal world. We look at an anthill, for example, with its elaborate tunnel systems, or we look at a beaver dam, or all manner of things that we find in that realm of the creation. But none can even begin to compare with the intellect of mankind. Here is God, who in His perfect creation has created partners to be stewards, to oversee this grand creation, and has given them the ingenuity and the ability to have this control. As we think about that then, we need to come to the idea of environmentalism and what God has given mankind to do. As we think about this idea, perhaps it's good for us just to simply begin with a definition of environmentalism. That's kind of a hard word to define. We begin looking online and we find all kinds of ideas associated with it. Oftentimes, the popular website Wikipedia will give us the best overall view of certain topics, and that may be the case here. This is a rather wordy definition, but I think it helps us to realize all that goes into this idea of environmentalism. Let's look at this definition. Environmentalism, or environmental rights, is a broad philosophy, ideology, and social movement regarding concerns for environmental protection and improvement of the health of the environment, particularly as a measure for this health seeks to incorporate the impact of changes to the environment on humans, animals, plants, and non-living matter. While environmentalism focuses more on the environmental and nature-related aspects of green ideology and politics, ecology combines the ideology of social ecology and environmentalism. Again, rather wordy, but yet note what this definition shows us. It shows a number of things coming together from philosophy to politics, joining in this idea that we refer to as environmentalism. And as we look at that definition, I'd like to make the point that this is different than the idea of conservation. Most of us would profess to be conservationists. Most of us are happy to see areas of our world left alone, and when trees are cut down, to replace those trees. Conservation is something that most are going to agree on. However, when we get into the realm of environmentalism, what we're finding is a much broader idea that, as we looked at in the beginning of our study, is pulling in the idea of religion into that. So then, as we look at this view of what environmentalism is in a very broad category, let's ask ourselves the question of how does this go along with what we find in the Bible? To make the distinction between what we're talking about in this lesson and conservation, I've given the idea the term radical environmentalism. This would go far beyond the idea of planting more trees or protecting areas of the planet. Instead, we're talking about this great social movement that is complete with laws and justice and injustice and punishments. And when we talk about radical environmentalism and we contrast that with the view that we just looked at with humanity, we're going to see the radical nature of what we're discussing. What you can see, if you have the ability to look on a screen right now, is a quote from a blog post that's entitled Killing Mother. An excerpt from this blog states, "Humans are exceptional in one respect, in their ability to sequester all the resources for themselves. In nature, when a virus or bacterial infection spreads unchecked, it is called a disease. When an organism multiplies without restraint, it is referred to as a biological nuisance. When cells grow out of control, it is cancer. Within nature, people are a cancer upon the planet." Now, if you look at that quote, you see the radical nature that some have taken the environmental movement to mean. Now, as we look at that idea that mankind is a blight, that mankind is a plague, that mankind is a cancer upon the planet, how does that correspond with the ideas that we find within the Word of God? Well, what we see is that there is a huge, huge contrast. Rather than this idea of a cancer or some kind of plague or something horrible, we find that God has a very different picture of what mankind is all about. I believe we find that well expressed in Psalm 8. Let's just read this together. Psalm 8 begins, "O Lord, our Lord, how majestic is your name in all the earth. You have set your glory above the heavens." Now, let's look and see what the psalmist has to say about mankind. "Out of the mouth of babies and infants, you have established strength because of your foes to still the enemy and the avenger. When I look at your heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars, which you have set in place, what is man that you are mindful of him, and the son of man that you take care of him? Yet you have made him a little lower than the heavenly beings and crowned him with glory and honor." Now listen for the Genesis connection here. You have given him dominion over the works of your hands. You have put all things under his feet, all sheep and oxen, and also the beast of the field, the birds of the heavens, and the fish of the sea, whatever passes along the paths of the sea. O Lord, our Lord, how majestic is your name in all of the earth. Does that sound like language that's comparing mankind to a cancer? No. What the psalmist is saying is that God has placed humanity in a position of glory and honor to have this dominion, this control over the environment. So one of the very stark contrasts that we're seeing right off the bat is that whereas the radical environmental movement seeks to decrease the importance of mankind, even turning him into the enemy, God rather states that mankind is made in his image to be given this position of very great honor and glory. So as we think about Psalm 8, any idea that robs mankind of this glory that God is speaking of is certainly foreign to the biblical idea of what God wants and what God expects of humanity. Let's also consider this from the idea of who's in control. One of the features of radical environmentalism is very much apocalyptic in nature, that we are getting very close in our abilities to destroy life as we know it. And so radical environmentalism takes the view of humans and says that humans are the blight because humans are working to destroy what we find on planet Earth. I'd like to share with you this quote from Life magazine. This is from the year 1975, and it illustrates our point. In this quote, it says, "Scientists have solid experimental and theoretical evidence to support the following predictions." Now listen carefully. In a decade, so that'd be 1985 is what we're talking about. In a decade, urban dwellers will have to wear gas masks to survive air pollution. By 1985, air pollution will have reduced the amount of sunlight reaching Earth by one half. So we go back quite a few years, and yet we're still, even backing up several decades, finding that radical nature of environmentalism. And here, a group of scientists are saying, if we don't change our ways in 10 years, we're all going to be wearing gas masks because humanity will have completely polluted the planet to the point that we'll not even be able to breathe fresh air. Predicted that it would be so bad that we would not have the sunlight, at least as they knew it then. And of course, here we are all of these years later, and what do we see? We see that it did not come to pass. Let me share this one with you, which I think is a very ironic quote from the past. This is taken from Kenneth Watt, and he says this, "The world has been chilling sharply for about 20 years. If present trends continue, the world will be about 4 degrees colder for the global mean temperature in 1990. But 11 degrees colder in the year 2000. This is about twice what it would take to put us into an ice age." So what do we find? Again, pulling a quote from the past, 21 years ago, according to Watt, we should have gone into an ice age. Yet, that was not the case. And the irony of this is, whereas he was predicting the cooling down of the earth, now we're hearing about the warming of the earth or the global warming that's taken place. What these things illustrate is the desire to make mankind much more powerful than he really is. While God has given humanity partnership in the environment and the ability to dominate and to subdue the earth, he has not given humankind the power to destroy the earth. In fact, I believe we can find that well emphasized in the book of Ecclesiastes. In chapter 1, the writer states, "The sun rises and the sun goes down, and hastens to the place where it rises. The wind blows to the south and goes around to the north. Around and around goes the wind, and on its circuits the wind returns. All streams run to the sea, but the sea is not full. To the place where the streams flow, there they flow again. The writer of Ecclesiastes is making the point that no matter what humanity does, life as God has placed it is going to continue. That we do not have the ability to stop what God has put into work. Now, let me make this point clear. That is not to say that humankind cannot cause trouble. We need only look at our history to the American Dust Bowl. And we see a time there where humanity did not act as wise stewards of the planet and created a situation that's going to bring a lot of suffering for a while. We think about more recently in the former Soviet Union, the Chernobyl explosion that so polluted an area that it's still off limits to this day. Yes, we can cause trouble, but what we cannot do is take destruction of the planet on our own. God has not given us the ability to come in and to stop what He has put into place. So then, we understand that when we talk about the radical nature of environmentalism, it is the wrong view of humanity as a cancer, and it's the wrong view of humanity in having the power to bring total destruction to the planet. Now, with all of that as our foundation and background, the real question comes, how do I need to look at this? As I'm hearing all of these things in the news about environmentalism and taking care of planet Earth, how does that impact me as a child of God? I've understood the radical nature of the movement, but is there something there that I need to be concerned about? And the answer to that is absolutely yes. When I think about Christianity and being a part of this creation that God has made, I certainly need to be concerned about it. I need to be concerned because of the goodness that God has prescribed here. So then, how is that going to be seen? How is my concern going to be illustrated in a positive way regarding this issue? Well, first of all, when I am showing care for the environment, a conservationist, I'm demonstrating respect for what belongs to God. Genesis 1 and 2 are there for a purpose. They are to show us the greatness of God, but they're also showing us to whom all of this belongs. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. They are His property. So, in a most basic level, I understand decency in taking care of what belongs to someone else. If I were to borrow someone's car, and I brought that car back filthy, filled with trash, hadn't been washed, maybe even had allowed it to get into an accident, there would be no doubt that I disrespected the owner of that car. Here is someone who, out of a kindness, allowed me to use it, yet I didn't take care of it. Well, take that illustration up many, many levels, and what we find is that God created this earth so that we could live here. What belongs to Him, He has allowed us to use. Therefore, I need to show respect for that. Because in showing respect for the creation, in turn, I'm showing respect for God. Think about what the psalmist in Psalm 50, verses 10 and 11 stated. Here, speaking on behalf of God, he says, "For every beast of the forest is mine, the cattle on 1,000 hills. I know all the birds of the hills, and all that moves in the field is mine." There is our point. What you and I see here belongs to God, yet He has placed us as stewards over that. And in that position, we need to show Him respect. Secondly, having concern for the creation demonstrates a spirit of godliness. I'd like to take you to a very interesting verse that we find in Proverbs chapter 12. In verse 10, the writer says, "Whoever is righteous has regard for the life of his beast, but the mercy of the wicked is cruel." The writer here is saying that righteousness can be shown in ways we might not think about. So you consider this being read in the day that it was written by a group of farmers, and they have their animals. And what the writer is saying is one of the ways righteousness is illustrated is that you are caring for these animals. You're not beating them. You're not mistreating them. Why? Because they belong to God. Refer back to Psalm 50, verses 10 and 11. The cattle on a thousand hills, they belong to me. Therefore, in demonstrating my godliness, what I'm doing is taking care of those animals that belong to God. That's an illustration of righteousness. So then, when I think about the creation, I need to be concerned about that which God has placed me in a position of dominion over. As I look at the animal world, God has said, "You're in charge here." As I look at the natural world, God has said, "You're in charge here." And He's given me the ability to take this and to use it for good. Yet, what I want us to understand is, when I use it for good and I treat it the way that I should, that is demonstrating righteousness. That is demonstrating godliness. Let me add one more. Not only is it a demonstration for respect for what belongs to God, and a demonstration of the spirit of godliness, it's a demonstration of loving my neighbor as myself. When I think about taking care of the planet, I'm not approaching that from the standpoint of, well, I've got the power to destroy it. And I'm not approaching it from the standpoint of, I am just an insignificant part of this. Instead, as one who has been placed in this position of partnership with God, I am going to use those resources for the betterment of others. That's an application that we use anywhere, right? And so when I think about environmentalism, when I think about taking care of these things, what that may mean is that me taking care of a certain element within my realm, within my power, and viewing that with frugality. In other words, I'm not wasting it on me just because I can. It's going to demonstrate that I have the willingness and the desire to help others. So you put all of this together, and it gives us a very interesting picture that we recognize to whom the creation belongs. We recognize our place as stewards in this creation in showing respect for what we've been allowed to use, demonstrating that spirit of godliness as we treat the animal world and other parts of the environment with respect. And it also demonstrates a love for others and the fact that I am going to be a conservationist. I am not going to be wasteful. So that my neighbors, whether they be contemporaries or my neighbors generations on down the road, are going to be able to be bettered by my concern for what's going on the planet. When I think about the creation from this standpoint, it simply fits in to how I view life. Everything I do is to be done for the glory of God. Now, let me state this as well. Radical environmentalism is not what I've just described. What I have just described is godliness. It's taking something at hand and using it for the glory of God. What I must understand is that when that becomes a radical environmental movement, it turns into idolatry. In Romans chapter 1, the Apostle Paul alluded to this idea when he says, for his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world in the things that have been made. So they are without excuse. For although they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks to him. But they became futile in their thinking, and their foolish hearts were darkened. Claiming to be wise, they became fools and exchanged the glory of the immortal God for images resembling mortal man and birds and animals and creeping things. The apostle says that God is readily known. From creation itself, you can see there's a creator. But yet, what has mankind done? Mankind has taken the creation and elevated it to God-like status. And so here Paul says that they've made images of animals and creeping things and birds and whatever, and it's those things that they're worshiping. Well, that's exactly what radical environmentalism does. In this case, earth becomes the god. We need only look at the history of the world to see what happens when a people abandons God. They are going to find something to put in his place. They're going to find something to worship. And it's interesting that in our very, very anti-religious, secular times, that has become the earth itself. And you look at enough quotes from radical environmentalists, and it will become painfully clear that they are using language that is very much religious in nature to describe this movement that they have proposed needs to be done to save the planet. Earth, Mother Earth, has become the god. And interestingly, every religion needs its sacred text. And so what we find in radical environmentalism is that science, and please note, if you can't see the screen, that I have that in quotation marks. Science has become the sacred text showing that mankind is evil. And so what we have here is what we have had for many, many years with people turning to idolatry and inventing writings to support their idolatry is exactly what we find in this radical environmental movement. Those who are, I would guess, 25 years and younger have grown up in an environment where they have been inundated with these ideas. I would guess that most every school celebrates Earth Day. Most every school promotes recycling. Most every place of business is concerned about its carbon footprint, whether out of some kind of allegiance to the environment or fear of being punished. And what this generation is facing is the danger of thinking that this is the normal, that this is the right way. Now, is there anything wrong with recycling? Absolutely not. Is there anything wrong with keeping the planet clean? Absolutely not. And as we've already stated, just the opposite. The danger is in looking at this and becoming so comfortable and so familiar with it that really, perhaps without even realizing, we're buying into the religious argument of the radical environmentalist movement. And that just simply cannot be. Because what people need to understand is that God is the one who's in control. Whether we're talking about our lives or the planet or the ending of the planet, God is the one who is in control. And that is a point that he made very, very early in our history. When he says, I am the one who is going to make the decisions here. And so in Genesis chapter 8 and verse 22, he says, while the earth remains, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night shall not cease. You see, God determines the cycles of the universe. God determines the seasons of our planet. And as I noted, there are places that we can make this portion of earth terrible. But when it comes to earth as a whole, the seed time and the harvest, the cold and the heat, the summer and the winter, the day and the night, they are going to continue until God says stop. And only then will these things close. So then, with that in mind, we remember our place as stewards of His creation. Until then, we take care of the area of the world where we live. We respect it out of respect for God. We treat the creation as good stewards in demonstrating righteousness. We love our neighbor by protecting resources that others can use either now or later. But we never buy into this idea that somehow the planet has become the God. I hope these ideas have been helpful for us as we think about the concept of what we're hearing in this movement versus what God has shown us. But ultimately, what I'd like for us to remember is that we are looking for a much better time. This creation is wonderful. It's good, as God has said. But yet God also tells us this: we, according to His promise, look for a new heaven and a new earth wherein righteousness dwells. You and I want to prove ourselves in this life. We want to show that we are good stewards of what God has entrusted with us. But most of all, we want to show ourselves as faithful people to Him. And I would encourage all of us to give thought to this day when a new heaven and earth will come, that we make sure that we are ready for that day to join forever in our eternal home with God. Thank you so much for joining us in this study. As always, if I can be helpful to you, please let me know. If you are ready to become a Christian, let me know that and we can make it happen very, very quickly. If there are things going on in your life that we can pray about, we'll do that as well. Whatever the case, let's show ourselves to be diligent stewards and children of God so that all of us can join with Him in that day that never ends. Again, thank you so much for joining in this study.